It's important when you chazer, be able to both see the trees but also see the forest. According to the Gemara comments, that the kovas hayad yarba, sometimes as you learn, the first time you learn piece by piece by piece individually, but then when you chazer, you can chazer the larger scale and see the bigger picture. It's important to know the pratim, but it's even more important to know the problem. So that's part of why the Sahara is semi-cumulative. That's why what we're chazering for the second time, where the sukkahs that we learned in the first quarter of the year, that we're focusing really on the bigger picture, to know inside all the gemaras that we saw, the gemaras in Misachim, other gemaras that came up, and to have a kinyan on the Tosfos in Misachim that we saw, and to highlight also a number of the larger yesodos that came up over these sukkahs. So let's give you the list, and let's briefly talk. Review a number of the yesodos that came up in the discussion of Bidikas Chametz, which began Daf Beis and also took us to Daf Dalet and took us to Daf Vav and took us to Daf Yud. You know, we mentioned see those Gemaras inside. the overarching issues, obviously, that we were sensitive to the fact that we're discussing immediately. The Mishnah raises, the Mishnah opens with the concept of Bdikas Chametz, which should presumably drop on. Rashi opens right away with the basic question about any din drabanan is, Vipnei ma teknu, what's the day? For din daraisa, Rabbi Shechter always reminds us, if din daraisa, the fundamental question is, what's the source? I'm so given. If din drabanan, what's the source in terms of the motivation? That, what problem are Chazal trying to solve by creating this din drabanan? In examining and exploring the Dinam Drabanan, it took us, that's always within the matrix of the Dinam Daraisa. It's important to remember there are many, many mitzvah daraisa when we think about Pesach. Learning Arvei Pesachim, we're focused on the mitzvah, say, of Matzah and of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the Marah as well, and Karban Pesach. In terms of Chametz, so it's important to bear in mind the starting point is that there are three major mitzvos of chametz. There's the mitzvah asay of tashbisu, and then there is a pair of mitzvahs lo saseh. The mitzvah lo saseh, the mitzvah asay of tashbisu is a mitzvah asay to destroy the chametz, and that we're going to be coming to more, but that already came up in the discussion of bittul, which we'll get to in a moment. The mitzvah asay to destroy the chametz in Erev Pesach, to be mashpis, to be more precise, to cease the chametz in Erev Pesach, and then there's a related Easter against owning chametz, and then there's the Easter against eating chametz over the course of Pesach, which has been focused on more recently in Bikias in the third parak. Now, so one major issue that exists, so obviously the Rashi Tosas debate, where does Bidika fit in? Bidika is meant to support the, you know, being careful about the Isser Daraisa of only Chametz, and Bidika meant to support the Isser Daraisa against eating Chametz. And we saw Iran noted that there may be interesting relationship between these Din and Daraisa themselves. The Ran had noted, and that's what Tosis appeared to be alluding to as well, that it may be that these Isurim Daraisa aren't merely parallel, it's against owning Chametz, it's against eating Chametz, but it could be that the reason for Isur Daraisa, Psukim V'chumash, Bal Yerah, Bal Yematze, Isur Daraisa of owning Chametz is meant to support the other Isur Daraisa of eating Chametz. It's a Siyag Daraisa. It's a gzeira, the Issa Daraisa of owning chametz is a gzeira atu, the Issa Daraisa of eating chametz. Well, that led to a rich discussion, and nobody want to figure out, Tosas deals a level of drabanan, why do we have more dinam drabanan like bidikas chametz to protect chametz as opposed to other machalas or suras? The Ran is already upping the ante in terms of daraisa. You have a siyag daraisa, how come? It's interesting that the Issa Achilas chametz draws a siyag daraisa when many others do not. And Rabbi Yosef Engel pointed out that this is an example of a larger phenomenon, the Siyag Daraisa. That he has in his Sefer Lakach Tov, and although we often make the assumption that gzeros are purely a drabbanan phenomenon. He says that's actually an incorrect assumption, and he has numerous counterexamples, numerous examples of gzeros which are deraisa. One of them is right here. One of them, he said, look, the Ran says, and we saw in Shir Tosa seems to assume as well, that Barab and Matze, a pasuk in the Chumash, a lav deraisa, is itself a siyag to eat the iser against eating chametz. Then he had a series of other examples as well. You saw Rashi and Chumash and the Shulta Giborim and Maseches Yuma suggest that Tosefas Shabbos, discussion with whether the requirements in most of Michal Kosher start Shabbos really is that Chiyav Daraisa, Chiyav Rabbana, not at all. And they seem to assume it's a Daraisa, and it's meant to protect against Melech HaShabbos. There's a discussion about what's the lumdus of Tosef HaShabbos, but Rashi and Shulta Gibor both suggest it's a gzeira. The lumdus of Tosef HaShabbos, you have to start Shabbos early, so you don't end up going into Shabbos itself. So you have a din deraisa, a siyag to another din deraisa. Tosef HaShabbos is a siyag to Melech HaShabbos itself. By Rabbi Matzah, is against owning chametz is a siyag to protect you from eating chametz. And we saw Abbas Rabbi Nosson, the Midrashim, talk about Kiruv Basar is a siyag doraisa. Certainly Ram understands, Negiya, Kiruv Basar, is a doraisa meant to protect against Gila Rayos. A slew, the Abbas Rabbi Nosson, the Midrashim suggests that there's a slew of Isurei Nazir, the Gimel meaning Benazir. The Nazir is forbidden to be Metal Mason, forbidden to take yogurt, and forbidden to drink wine. We understand that. The Isur against drinking wine is a sense of taking a step back from Tanugi El Mazeh. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, that's a debate that the Gemara has, whether it's proper or improper to have that additional asceticism. But that's what the Zeros is, a degree of asceticism. So you understand there's an Isur against drinking wine. How come the Torah says you can't eat grape skins, you can't eat grape seeds? And what's wrong? No one ever got high in grape juice. So what's wrong? So the answer is that's what the Midrashim explained. That the Isser against eating grapes is a siyag deraisa to protect against drinking wine. So chametz bePesach has a siyag deraisa, perhaps, and Shabbos has, Melach Shabbos has a siyag deraisa, Yayin Nozer has a siyag deraisa, Yorois has a siyag deraisa. We mentioned as well the Kesef Mishnah suggests it's not where you expect to find it. It's not Hilchos Machalos Asuros. It's in beginning of Tumas Meis, because the Mishnah suggests that the Isser Daraisa of Bishul Basa B'Cholav might be a siyag to protect against Achilas Basa B'Cholav. It's a slew of siyag and Daraisa. Those are the famous ones. It's Vengel's more as well. And we touched already then, and then it came up repeatedly since, the notion of Kol Tikar Abanim Ke'in Daraisa Tikkun. That Chazal, the Gemara has a principle in several places, that Chazal, when they craft Yom Drabanan, they seek as much as possible, even though they have a particular problem they're trying to solve. We need to protect against people doing this or X, whatever it is. We need to make it as a motivation for the Gvira, Tama Takana, even though there's a certain time that they're trying to achieve, but in crafting, in formulating the details of the Tzura Satakana, the Ofer Satakana, the Chazal are sensitive as much as possible to try to adopt patterns from pre-existing devices. He gave one example of that, is for instance, the fact that Tchum Shabbos Midrabana is 2,000 Amos, Din Drabana, where did Chazal get that shear from? So they got that shear, for whatever reason, they wanted to limit the extent to which people are walking beyond the city, to avoid Tircha, to avoid Rocha, whatever the rationale is, to Alpayim Amos Tchum Shabbos Midrabana. But the number 2,000, as opposed to 2,500, 1,500, or 1,000, or 3,000, is Ke'en Deraisa, because by Ari Halavim, the Pesukim talk about dinim that apply to the 2,000 Amos that surround the city. So you see on the level of Deraisa, in a different area of Halacha, you see on the level of Deraisa, there's a status to the 2,000 Amos radius around the city. That's the neighborhood of the city. It has certain dinim associated with it. Minat Torah by Ari Halavim, the Chazal borrowed that pattern for Midrabanan, Chum Shabbos as well. We saw this idea of Kol Tikar Abanim Ke'in Daraisa Tikkun in the broader sense applies to all, the whole notion of Gzeiros Rabbanan. Because Avraham Rabbi Nosson says, Chazal makes Gzeiros Rabbanan, after all, Kadosh Baruch Hu makes Gzeiros. There are Siyagim Daraisa, in parallel, the whole enterprise of Zeresh Rabbanon is itself a kol tikkur Rabbanon in Beraisa Tikkur. The very note, not only the details of, you know, like the example we just gave before, Chum Shabbos, 2,000 Amos, but even in a larger sense, the whole notion of making siyaga, making gezeros, which is predominantly a drabbanon enterprise, but it's all patterned after the few gezeros daraisa that already exist on the books. And finally, one other major issue that came up in the sugyas of Bedikas Chametz, I'll take a question in a second, was big machlokas rishonim, Rashi and Tosis on the Avdalah and the Beis, machlokas on Beis and Alav, what's the tam ha-takana of Bedikas Chametz, on the Avdalah and the Beis, a big discussion about bittul. What does bittul even mean? The Gemara says, mid-raisa bittul ba-masagi, big machlokas Rashi and Tosis, whether bittul is, and we heard many guests here about this topic as well, we got a lot of perspectives on this machlokas, but the machlokas Rashi and Tosis, whether bittul is, Tosis says it's a form of hefker. Bittul works because it's no longer mine. If I'm hefker it, so then it's not mine. So then I can buy by Rabbi Mutzik. It's not mine. But Rashi says, and the Rambam says, no, it's something more intrinsic. We show it, Rashi Tosis himself already points out, it doesn't really seem to fit all the rules of bittul and of hefker. And the language, the word bittul doesn't sound like it means hefker. Maybe it's something more intrinsic. It's actually a way of performing tashbisu. I could do physical tashbisu, the way something you're supposed to remember read. Sometimes I do physical tashbisu, or sometimes I just do like a mental, a voluntary tashbisu, tashbisu of will. And that we had discussion about, that would seem to indicate the tashbisu, the bittul only applies in certain cases. A handful of gemaras when they talk about bittul, usually where it's inaccessible, or where for some reason or another, it's not a simple matter to physically destroy it. I'm not away to another mitzvah, or it's high in the sky, it's high up on the rafters, or it's below rubble. So bittul seems to be something that I use when normal physical tashbisu is not an option. So that seems to be the two major approaches to bittul. Whether you say it's a form of tashbisu, I'm saying it's ka'afra, and that's sometimes, if I can't physically destroy it, then to say it's ka'afra is valuable, the Rashi Rabbah, or Atosis, it's a form of, it's just another name for hefker. Question?
Yeah, can you repeat which aspect is Chum Shabbos, example of
Chum Shabbos is an example, is a great example of Kol Tikkur Rabban Ke'ez Barais HaTikin, because the for whatever reason, Chazal wanted to create the Rabbanon Chum Shabbos, but they chose to say it's 2,000 Amos. Where they get the number 2,000 Amos from? In terms of that aspect of Torah Sattva. The answer is they borrowed it from, they adopted that from the already existing pattern or level of Daraisa by Ara Levim. There too, there's a din of the Migrash Ara Levim, that the area, 2,000 Amos area outside the city has certain special din. Okay. And then we saw that we got very involved in the world of Zmani Hayom and Tetzak Kochavim on Beis Amud, Balam Beis Amud Aleph, and then it came back again. It got back into a little bit in the Sugya of Tanis on Beis Amud Beis. So a couple of key, there's a lot of discussion, but a couple of key points. Number one, just to have the terminology and the basic units. To remember, sunrise in the east and it sets to the west, and that's sunrise and that's sunset. That's how the sunrise is Hanetzachama or Zricha, different names for it, and sunset is Shkia. And then there's a period of time before, so when the sun is out, it's light, unless there's an eclipse. But now is it light when the sun is out, but it already begins to get light gradually even before sunrise. An hour, more than an hour before sunrise, it's already beginning to get light. And it gradually, once after the sun sets, light doesn't immediately disappear, it gradually darkens. The number of shiurim that Chazal speak of before and after, the two most significant ones are Los HaShachar before sunrise and Tetzak Kochavim after sunset. Los HaShachar is dawn, is first light. When it begins, when the darkness begins to reduce, when you begin to have the first hint of light, which depending on whether you're using your own eyes or using instruments is either 12 or 18 degrees. The sun is still 12 or 18 degrees below the horizon. And gradually, as it gets higher and higher, close to sunrise, it gets brighter and brighter. And the Mishnah Megillah says that mitzvahs are applied during mitzvahs of the day, like milah, and shofar, and lulav. That mitzvahs have to be done during the day. So ideally, we would recommend you only do them after Hanetzacham, after sunrise. But you're yotze any time after Olos HaShachar, which is one of the indications that the day really begins at Olos HaShachar. Now, when does night begin? When does day end? That's more complicated. That's sugi and Shabbos, and later in Pesachim, and here in Pesachim, about Bein HaShemashos. The transition from day to night is more fraught, and there we consider from sunset until Tetzach HaChavim, until it's dark enough that you can see three stars, not fully dark, as the Gemara points out, but dark enough that you can see three stars, that degree of darkness. So from sunset until you have the degree of partial darkness, Tetzach HaChavim, so that's called Bein HaShemashos. And the Gemara says in Shabbos that Bein HaShemashos is Safik Yom, Safik Laila. So before sunset is Vada Yom, after Tetzach HaChavim is Vada Laila, but in between, that's the Safik Yom, Safik Laila. And we saw that the famous stira between the Gemara in Shabbos and Ben Mamad Likin and the Gemara later in Pesachim in the ninth Perek, about when Rav Tamari points at this problem, how long is it from Shkia to Tetzach HaChavim? The Gemara in Shabbos says, it seems to say from Shkia to Tetzach HaChavim is 3/4 of a mil. 13 minutes, 16 minutes, 18 minutes, not so long. Gemara in Pesachim appears to say that no, that Tetzach HaChavim is 4 mil. 4 mil after Shkia. More than an hour. So which one is it? Is it around 1/4 of an hour or is it more than an hour? That's an outright stira apparently between Shabbos and Pesachim. And there we saw two major yeshuvim. There's Rabbi Tam's Teretz and then the Gra's Teretz, and he's bringing back the approach of the Gaonim. Maharama Shakar and others understood that the major Rishon, there were several major Rishon who also held this way, potentially the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush. The approach of Benatam is that there are two different times called Shkia. Benatam says, Tetzach HaChavim is, as the Gemara of Pesachim says, 72 minutes, 4 mil after what we call sunset. But when the Gemara on Shabbos spoke about sunset, it meant a later sunset, Shkia Shnir, or Sof Hashkia. So after sunset, the Benatam thinks it's still Vada Yom for almost an hour after what we call sunset. That's the approach of Benatam, the Shtei Shkios. Two different points of time called Shkia. That's his Yishu for the steer between Shabbos and Pesachim, while the Gra said, no. There's only one sunset. There are two things called Tetzach HaChavim. He says, the Gemara of Pesachim is talking about when all of the stars come out. That's when it's fully dark, parallel to Olos HaShachar. But that's not what's relevant to the halachas of Bein HaShemashos. The Gemara in Shabbos is talking about explicitly when three stars come out. That's not all the stars, it's not fully dark. It's dark enough you can see three stars. There's plenty still to go. So the Gemara says, Shkia is only one sunset, and there are two different Tetzach HaChavim. It says Gimel HaChavim, and it says Kol HaChavim. And Bein HaShemashos is from Shkia, according to the Gemara, until it says Gimel HaChavim. We spoke about the Rav's idea, touching it lightly, that to understand the whole idea of Bein HaShemashos, whatever it is, Gra and Bein HaTam debate when does Bein HaShemashos start and end. But at some point, there's a period of time of twilight, from whatever you call Shkia to whatever you call Tetzach HaChavim, which is Safik Yom, Safik Laila. It's the point that the whole notion is all odd. Rav points out Yartzeit Rashi. What do you mean Safik Yom, Safik Laila? Let's figure. And the Gemara discusses when does Bein HaShemashos start, when does Bein HaShemashos end. Why don't you just figure out when Yom ends and Laila begins? We never try to be pushing the actual Safik. So strange. There's some period of time during which we're not sure whether it's already night or not. Figure out the actual divine one. So because there are other kashas, Rav suggested, based on the Ritva and Yuma, that it's not like there's a moment in time, there's a magic number, there's a magic moment in time when day goes out, we're not sure when it is. No. It's not like an electron cloud, right? I'm not sure with that interpretation. I'm not sure where the point is. And there's a note, that period of time, Vanish Rushes, it is, we treat it as a Safek because it really is both. Because the sun is gone, but there's still light. So from the perspective of the definition of Yom in the fourth day of Bria, sun is gone, it's already nighttime. The definition of Yom in the first day of Bria, It's still light, so it's daytime. So since it's a paradox, it's contradictory. From one perspective it's day, from another perspective it's night. So we treat it as a suffix that's really both. That's the real point there. Every once in a while you have a situation where only one definition is relevant, and all of a sudden we say, oh, Yom only goes till Shkia. An example of that was the discussion of Shaos Zmanios, a number of Shiurim of time during the daytime when we divide the day into 12 hours. That's the Rama already when they had this Nusach. An hour, when Chazal used the word Sha'a, they usually don't mean 60 minutes, they mean a 12th of the day. What's a 12th of the day? And that's like, for instance, Shalom Shema Kriya Shema, it's 3 hours into the day, a quarter of the day, in Masachas Pesachim. Like you have an Isuri Chametz to begin after 4 hours, after 5 hours. These hours are all divide the day into 12 parts. And a longer day, so Shabbos Manis are longer. A shorter day, Shabbos Manis is longer in the summer and a shorter in the winter. The question is, the 12th of what? So the Magen Avraham says it's the 12th. You go all the way until, potentially from Alos until Tzitzit Chabad. Because after all, that's a day. And the Gemara says, no, it's from sunrise to sunset. It's sundial hours, astronomical hours, which is appealing, but the Rav said, what's Takav Shat? That's not, it's Yom even before Shkia, as we see Chazar over again, that Beis of Beis. And the answer is, yes, there are two ways of defining Yom, and when you deal with calculations, the only one that can work is working with the sun, because sunrise and sunset are precisely defined moments in time. In the moving on, in the Sugya Bav Machteres, which took us from the Beis Amidal to the Beis Amidal, it also brought us into the world of lifeboat ethics, and it's a world of issues that have to do with when one gives up one's life, saving life and sacrificing life. Pikuach nefesh, saving life, and sacrificing life is Yarg Valyava. So we saw lots to talk about, but briefly, we saw the sugi in Yuma, Mishnayis in Yuma talked about eating on Yom Kippur to save one's life, and be Michal Shabbos to save one's own life or someone else's life, a building eating, even if it's a suffix, Mishnah says. A building that collapsed. We're not sure there's anyone inside. Even if there are people inside, it could be that they already perished. It could be that it's too late to save their lives. And yet, even on Shabbos, during the week, we would remove the rubble anyway to be able to bury them, even if we know for sure that they passed away. On Shabbos, we're not going to Michal Shabbos for the sake of Kavura. We would be Mechal Shabbos for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh, and even Safek Pikuach Nefesh. Mish says, you know, there's so many Sfeikas, maybe there's no one there, and if he's there, maybe he already passed away. Or maybe he's going to survive until after Shabbos, even if we don't dig him out. Still, even though it's Saf, Sfek, Sfeika, we're still Mechal Shabbos for even the slight chance of Pikuach Nefesh. We saw the Gemara on Dav Kehe is a fascinating discussion about why. How do we know that Pikuach Nefesh is Mechal Shabbos? And very intriguing, lengthy brisa that quotes 5-6 different Tanan, each one with its own source in Pesukim. Of those, the one we focused on the most was Chalel Alav Shabbos Achas, Kedei Shishma Shabbos Zahar. The Pasuk Vishom B'nei Shabbos HaShabbos indicates you have the right to make cost-benefit analysis. I can say, I'll give up one Shabbos, I'll be Mechal Shabbos today, this week, to save Reuven's life, and Reuven will be able to live for many more Shabbosos. So, B'Shom B'nei Yisrael Es HaShabbos, you guard Shabbos overall. Look at the big picture. Cost-benefit analysis. Then the Gemara, the Mishnah, that they see, the Brice had many other drushes as well. And the Gemara, fascinatingly, comes to Maskana that none of those drushes is sufficient. And that you need the drush of the Amor Shmuel. Shmuel drush was V'chai Ben. You live when you do mitzvahs, as Vlo Shemos Ben. And not to keep mitzvahs to the point where you may pass away. The Gemara points out that the strength of Shmuel's drasha over that of the Tanaim is that the Tanaim, the number of kasha against the Tanaim, the universal kasha, is they all own, the Tanaim's drashas all only teach that a vadai pikuach nefesh is dough for Shabbos. But safik pikuach nefesh, the Mishnah tells us that's a din, it's clearly a din, that safik pikuach nefesh is dough for Shabbos. Yes, Michal Shabbos, even if it's, you might save someone's life that way, but those drashas don't indicate it. Where Shmuel's drasha does. The Chayim have to certainly live, as opposed to even risking the possibility of losing life, that already you back off and you'll violate the din to make sure the Chayim that you can certainly live. And then, you have the din of Yahar Vayavar. Although, although Shabbos and Yom Kippur and the vast majority of halacha is put aside in order to save someone's life, even as I said, even a Sufik people with nefesh. But there are, there's a sugya later in Psachim, the second parak, and a sugya in the end of Ben Sor Mor and Sanhedrin, and elsewhere as well. We looked at those two gemaras, Psachim and Sanhedrin. There are certain cases where we say that pikuach nefesh is not docha. Most notably, the Gimel Chamus. You do not have the right to buy those dinim in order to save one's own life, nor to save someone else's life. And we, in the context of Bab Machteret, we focus particularly on the Gemara's Matur, for the Gemara explains how you know each of those three. And the Gemara tells a story, how you know that the Shvichas Damim, that Ritzicha, that murder, is not Mutter Makim Tegok Nefesh. Can I kill to save? Can I kill one person to save another person? Can I kill someone else to save myself? But the Gemara says, absolutely not. Shvichas Damim is not Nidcha by Pikuach Nefesh. Shvichas Damim falls in the rubric of Nehar Vayavar. They're willing to be killed rather than violate murder, or violate Shvichas Damim. The Gemara says, the Gemara tells the story with Rava, the Gemara says, it's a Svara. My Chazah Damid Dach Zemakfeh. Reuven is going to kill Shimon to save Reuven's life. Well, so if you save Reuven's life, he's killing Shimon. So who's to say that my blood is rarer than his? Who's to say that my life is more valuable than his? I don't have the right to make that assessment. I don't have the right to prioritize my life over his. And that's why we saw in the Cheskenach and others raised, the Neibav Machteres is an exception because as far as stops applying. Normally, I can't play God. I can't decide my life is more valuable than someone else's. But if the fellow's above Machteres, he was Poshaya. He's breaking an entry. He knows that he's risking his own life and the lives of others. So then he loses that Svara. And that perhaps explains why above Machteres you do have the right to kill the intruder if need be. And finally, the last chunk of sugyas that we worked on, the first quarter, was a series of various sugyas made in Yana the Yama. And over the course of those sugyas, several major, larger topics came up. One is to be fluent in the different categories in the discussion of Birkas HaTorah. So it came across the different categories of brachas. Birkas HaMitzvahs, Birkas HaAvodah, and Birkas HaNenin. The Rambam already formulated the very beginning of the brachas. Birkas HaNenin are brachas on pleasure, on food, on smells, whether before or after Birkas HaKorah. Those are all Birkas HaNenin. Birkas HaMitzvahs are brachas you say in advance of the mitzvah. And typically, Asher Kirish, 99 times out of 100, when a brachas has the nusach, Asher Kirish, Asav Yitzivanu, the Rosh HaKedivis Akbu, Aleph Kuf Bezvav, Asher Kirish, Asav Yitzivanu, it's usually a giveaway that we're talking about Birkas HaMitzvah. But we say there are a handful of exceptions. Maybe Birkas HaTorah, maybe Birkas HaEris, they may be exceptional, they may fit in a different category, perhaps they are category number three. Birkas HaVodah are brachas that respond to various stimuli. I see something impressive. I see something amazing. I see the Alps. I hear the thunder. I come across a place where Nisim were done to Klal Yisrael, and so on and so forth. Those all Birkas HaVodah, the third category of brachas. In terms of Birkas HaMitzvahs in particular, one of the major topics that we came across was the big machlokas we showed him. And the Machlokas LaHalacha of Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, can I make a Birkas HaMitzvah on a voluntary mitzvah? The Machlokas Ben Tam and Rambam and subsequently Ramah and Shulchan Aruch. The Ashkenazim and Ramah follow Ben Tam, the Sfaradim and Mechaba follow Rambam. It comes up most frequently when a woman volunteers the mitzvah Sasei Shazman Ram. A woman's going to volunteer to shake lulav, a woman's going to volunteer to listen to shofar, and so on and so forth. So that's lovely. But the question is, can you say a bracha? So Ramah, the Talmud Ramah say, you're not mechiv to do the mitzvah. If you do the mitzvah, if you're doing the mitzvah, you got to say a bracha before you do the mitzvah. And Ramah and Shulchan Aruch say, no, you want to do the mitzvah gevaldik, but you're not allowed to say a bracha, presumably because you can't say v'tzivano. V'tzivano means HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us. I wasn't commanded. The woman wasn't commanded. She's volunteering. It's a beautiful thing to volunteer, but she's not mitzvah. That's a big machlokas, and then we saw that came up in an interesting way, a Birkas HaTorah. So the Grad pointed out that the Mechaber surprisingly, paskins that women do say Birkas HaTorah if they volunteer to learn. In terms of the discussion of Avos Kodem Matan Torah, Avos Kodem Matan Torah, we came across that in the city of Chinuch. That's a big issue that Rishonim discussed over the course of Sefer Bereishis. The most notable kasha is on one hand, Chazal tells in Yuma, Avraham Avinu Kim Kol Torah Ashel Bet Nun. There are many midrashim to that extent as well. On the other hand, there are a number of instances in Chumash that they were not keeping the halacha that would be given centuries later at Har Sinai. Most notably, Yaakov marries two sisters. That's Gil Arayos. Bismarck said that is absolute Gil Arayos. Yisr Karis, Yahar Val Yavar, Yaakov Avinu married Rachel and Leah. Perhaps Bila and Zilpah were sisters as well. So how do you make sense of that? So many approaches we've shown in the Chorim how to understand that. The Ramban understands that they were volunteering. It was quoted in Torah, they were volunteering. They only volunteered to keep halacha in Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov Avinu marries the two sisters outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Ramah is of the opinion that he says that Gemara talks about Avraham Avinu. So he thinks it's only Avraham Avinu, but not Yaakov. We saw the Maral, our chef uses Maral to explain one of the issues in the Sugi of Chinuch. Maral suggests that they only volunteered Mitzvah Saseh to keep the Mitzvah Saseh, but they did not volunteer to avoid the Mitzvah Saseh. Michai Mivalojin suggested that since they were volunteering, it's called Matan Torah, it wasn't obligatory, but they had the Yaakov had the right to say, I'll accomplish more in Shamayim, I'll accomplish more spiritually by marrying both sisters. Obviously, there were great things were done in Shamayim, great tikkunim through marrying both Rachel and Leah. So since halacha was not yet obligatory, it was called the Matan Torah, they had the right to make that call. So they kept halacha, unless they had some spiritual cheshbon otherwise. That's Michai Mivalojin's approach. In front of the Radak and the Rabban suggested as well, because they may not be meant literally. He doesn't think the Chazal means, it doesn't mean literally, they actually, they did Pinya HaBen, and that they shook a lulav on Sukkot, and Radak says, no, it means that they lived, and the Ramban himself, near the end, seems to be warm to this idea. It means that they lived in ways that were consistent with all the themes of the mitzvahs. All the moral, ethical, religious principles, all the Talmud and mitzvahs, the others, even Kohen and Torah, they were already keeping all of the ideas that underpin the mitzvahs. That's how the Radak and the Rambam understand. But Lav Davka, they actually physically, specifically kept all the behaviors of halacha. It was called the Matan Torah. And finally, one thing that came of our discussion of Simchas Yontif and Simchas Torah in Ma'arav Simcha, one of the big issues that came up is the famous Gemara later in Maseches Pesachim, the Tanaim, both the legend of Yeshua were sensitive to a steer in the Pesukim. What is Simchas Yom Tov supposed to look like? Is it Lashem or is it Lachem? Is it supposed to, Simchas Yom Tov supposed to be expressed spiritually or physically? Should it be more learning, more davening, more singing halal? And eat the same, and don't fast, but eat the same tuna fish sandwich that you eat otherwise? Or should it be, no. You have the same learning and davening, the same Simchas HaNefesh every day. We should be marbe simchas haguf, a lot of eating, a lot of drinking. So that's a stirim sukim. And the Lazar Yeshua appeared to have a methodological machlokas. What do you do when you have an unresolved stir? No kasva shlishi shachiyah benei. What are you doing? Shakes of achishim zazah. So Lazar says it's either or. Yeshua says it's both, half and half. So Lazar takes a disjunctive approach. He says either oku lachem, oku lachem, either or. And Yeshua, we pass on to Yeshua, Yeshua says, no, it's and, it's conjunctive. You have to do both. How do you do both? So spend half the day on Simchas Aguf, and half the day on Simchas Nefesh. Chetzel Hashem, Chetzel Lachem. That's a machlokas at Tanan, and may as Rashad to suggest be a larger machlokas in Derech HaLimut, how you deal with such a stira, and Lamasa, it's a machlokas in terms of the gather of Simchas Yom.